Okay, everyone ready? Okay, good morning. All right, we are doing Tesvav Amud Aleph, starting on Tesvav Amud Aleph. The Gemara is picking off on a discussion from the last Mishnah, where it talked about a certain category, the last two Mishnahs, where the Mishnah has talked about a certain category of things that you're not allowed to send, or that you are allowed to send to your friend on Yontif. So the general Pashup Shad is that this is a category of things that has nothing to do with Eruv, has nothing to do with Muktzah. It's kind of an additional rabbinic prohibition on handling or sending certain things. The Miri says this is Mechse Kemisasek Biyomtev Vatzarachol, that these are things that, even though they might be Kalim, so they might be might not be technically Muktzah, they are things that are inappropriate or not typically used on Yontif, and therefore sending them to someone else on Yontif, it looks like you're doing so to prepare for Chol, and that's why the Mishnayos say it's prohibited. So one of the things that we talked about was certain garments or certain instruments that are kilayim, that are shatnez. And the Mishnah was the Gemara was trying to figure out what it is that is shatnez that you're allowed to send, according to the Mishnah. And so we're on the very, very top of Tesvav Manah if we say Elo Bekashin. What we must be talking about, when we say something that you're allowed to send, that even though it is kilayim, even though it's shatnez, we must be talking about kushin, something that's hard. So the general idea here is, as we said on the very bottom of the last amud, there's a rabbinic prohibition on sitting on kilayim. Midoraisa, the pasuk says lo yale alecha, so you're not allowed to wear a garment of kilayim of shatnez. But there, on a Torah level, there's no problem with sitting on a cushion of shatnez. The problem was that the rabbis prohibited even sitting on shatnez because of exera shema yala nima, that a thread might fall upon your leg or fall upon a place where you're sitting. And so therefore they said, don't sit on anything that could be a problem of shatnez. But as Tosfos points out here, that rabbinic prohibition didn't extend to something that was hard, that's not derechimum, that's not something that's a garment, that's the kind of thing that would insulate you for warmth. And the Gemara is suggesting here that prohibition doesn't apply. It's saying bekashin, something that's hard, where it's not derechimum in mechammin, and therefore it's mutter to sit on it, and therefore you'd be allowed to send it to someone on Yontif because it has a useful purpose. V'chihada amar Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yoshua, hainamta gamda denarish sharia. So Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yoshua, said that this certain beged, this namta, some sort of beged, that is gamda, that's kasha, that's hard, denarish, that was made, or that comes from narash, is mutter. Mutter to sit on it, because again, it's not mechamim, it doesn't provide warmth, it's hard, and therefore it is mutter. It's not a problem with kilayim, even midrabanan. And then similarly, Amar Rav Papa, ardalin, another similar type of thing, that this is, Rashi points out, he quotes the Gaonim as saying this is some kind of, it looks like some kind of insert in your shoe, maybe like some kind of thing that you put to regulate your balance or the comfort of your shoe. Ardalin, ein bom ben mishum kilayim, they also don't have a prohibition of kilayim because they're hard, they don't provide warmth. Amar Rava, Hanitzrari de Pshiti, Ein Bahem Mishum Kilayim. So these, I guess like a sack or a bag that holds money. So that doesn't have a problem with Kilayim because again, it doesn't provide warmth. It's like a wallet. It's like a sack holding money. It's hard. It doesn't provide warmth. However, the Bizrani Yeshbo Mishum Kilayim. But if it holds beans, if it holds seeds, that is that is a problem of kilayim, and you can't use that for warmth. You think of a bean bag kind of thing. So a bean bag can provide warmth. There's some comfort there. It's not like a coin bag. It's different. Rashi Amar, however, Rashi said, echad ze ve'echad ze, whether you're talking about a bean bag or whether you're talking about a bag holding money, ein ben mishum kilayim v'fish ein derechimu bekach. Either way, these are not the kinds of things that are used for warmth or that provide warmth, and therefore they don't. There's no ister kilayim for either of these. Okay. The next thing in the Mishnah was the sandal hamesumer. Avalo sandal hamesumer. You're not allowed to send to someone a certain type of shoe that was constructed in a certain way. So the Gemara says, Sando Hamasumer, this certain type of shoe, my time ago, why aren't you allowed to send it to someone on Yantif? Mishum Maisa Shahaya, because of a certain story that occurred. And Rashi points you to the Sugya in Masechet Shabbos, which has this very peculiar story of a bunch of people who were holed up in a cave at a time of Shema, at a time when there was persecution against the Jews, and they were hiding in a cave. And the rule they made for themselves was that you're not allowed to leave the cave once you're in there, but you are allowed to come into the cave, meaning they would welcome new people into the cave, but they wouldn't let anyone leave, because they figured anyone coming into the cave can kind of look around and make sure none of the persecutors are watching, and he could sneak into the cave. But they were concerned that if anyone snuck out of the cave, that who knows who's watching from the outside, and therefore they would put at risk everyone in the cave who was hiding from the from these bad guys. And what happened was, someone joined the cave, but he, which was okay, he came into the cave, but he was wearing his shoe backwards, so that he left a footprint that looked as if it was a shoe going out of the cave. And when they noticed this, well, somehow some they looked out the window or they looked out the door, and they noticed, and they see footprints of a shoe going that way, they all completely freaked out. They figured they'd been compromised because it looked like someone exited the cave. Who knows if someone saw them exit the cave, now they were all going to be killed. And they just went absolutely crazy, and they started trampling each other. And part of the trampling involved these shoes, which were very hard shoes. And this terrible thing happened on Shabbos. And so the Chachamim made a takana in order to kind of memorialize this terrible event, that no one's allowed to wear a sandal hamasuber on Shabbos and Yontif anymore. And so that's why in our Mishnah we're saying you can't send someone on Yontif a sandal hamasuber, because it has no purpose on Yontif. And it would be like kind of
sandal masumer. Is that a funny kind of shoe?
It's a certain kind of shoe. I'm not sure how they constructed it.
It has no toe. It has no one.
I'm not sure.
It sounds like
a cleavage
shoe. There's stilettos on Shabbos.
Right. I'm not sure exactly how it was constructed. I don't even know. Some sort of, I don't know. But it,
High heels.
High heels, yeah. Right. But anyway, I don't know what was unique about this sandal masumer. It was a certain way that it was constructed. Amar Abaye, sandal hamesumer aser lena'alo, umuter letaltalo. So you're not allowed to wear a sandal hamesumer, but you are allowed to carry, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, because it's a kli. It does have a use in some respect. You can wear it on chol, and therefore you're allowed to move it. Aser lena'alo mishum maise shaya. You're not allowed to wear it because of this takana that was made. Umuter letaltalo midekatani. And how do you know that you're allowed to move it, that it's not muktzah altogether? Mida katani, in our Mishnah, it just says, ein mishalchin, that you're not allowed to send it to someone on Yontif. If the prohibition had been a more stringent prohibition of actually moving it, so then, hashtil tiltule aser, if it was already aser to move it, it was muktzah completely, so mishalchin mibay, would the Mishnah need to address the question of whether you're allowed to send it? Meaning the Mishnah is not far-reaching enough to indicate that it's usher to move. It just indicates that it's usher to send, implying that it is mutter to move. Okay, then the Mishnah said, v'lo minal she'eno tafur. The Mishnah also said you're not allowed to send a shoe that's not sewn up, meaning a shoe that's kind of just the raw ingredients of a shoe, but that's not fully constructed. So the Gemara says, pshita, of course that's true. You can't send the raw ingredients of a shoe. It, just like everything else here that we're talking about, has no useful purpose on Yontif. Why would you think that you can send it? So the Gemara says, "Lo nitzrucha da'afagav dinachet besichi." As Rashi points out, we're talking about where it had been like kind of partially constructed. There were some of the straps are there, so I guess it's minimally wearable. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says because it's not fully wearable, it's not fully constructed, you're not allowed to send it. Then the Mishnah had said, "Rabbi Yehuda Omer afwil min alavan," that you're not allowed to send a white shoe. So let's see, what is this talking about? Tanya. Now we're going to go to Tosefta. Rabbi Huda matir b'shachor v'oser b'lavan. Rabbi Huda said you're allowed to send a black shoe, you're not allowed to send a white shoe. Mifnei shetzarech bitzas hagir. Because a white shoe is not fully usable yet, it still needs one last thing. It needs to be painted black. The shoes they would wear back then were all painted black. Rashi says this is some kind of dye that's that you draw from the dirt. and you knead it together, and then you put it, it's like some kind of shoe polish. So because this shoe wasn't yet finished with this bitza zagir, with this black dye, with this black polish, and doing that would be usur, would be prohibited on yontif, so therefore you can't send a white shoe, you can only send the black shoe. Rabbi Yossi oser b'shachar. However, Rabbi Yossi said that even a black shoe you can't send, because even if it's black, that also doesn't mean it's fully prepared and ready to use. You still have one final step in its preparation, and that is to sand it down. We're talking about a leather shoe. So he's talking about sanding down the crevices and the rough parts from the, if you can imagine, leather has a smooth part, that's the outside, and then the inside is like rough and has crevices. That needs to be sanded down. And the Gemara then says, v'lo puigi. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, who seem to argue about whether you can use a black, whether you can send a black shoe on Yontif, they're really not arguing. Mar ki asrei or mar ki asrei, because each of them was reflecting the practice in their respective localities. Basrei demar bisro latachas. In Rabbi Yehuda's place, the rough part was on the inside. And therefore, the black shoe didn't then need any further refinement because the outside of the shoe was perfectly shiny and fine. Basrei demar, however, in Rabbi Yossi's location, Bistro El, the rough part would be on the outside, and therefore Rabbi Yossi said there still needed to be some finishing done on the outside of the shoe before it was wearable on Yontif. Zeh HaKlal, and then the Mishnah concludes that this is the rule generally, Kol Shini Usin Bo B'Yom Tov. The Mishnah concluded, Mishalchen Oso. Anything that you can use on Yontif, you can send on Yontif. That is the general rule. So Rav Sheshes, the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes, Shara Luhu Rabbanan Vishudure Tfilin Biyuma Tava. So Rav Sheshes says that the rabbis permitted you to send Tfilin on Yontif. Gemara says, Amrle Abayev Ha'anan Tanan Kol Shen Yusin Bo B'Yom Tov Mishalchen Oso. So Abayi says, how can that be? The Mishnah said, only things that are usable on Yontif you're allowed to send them. Tefillin, we all know, are not used on Yontif. Rashi points out, because we all know of this famous drasha that appears in the Gemara in Erevin, that tefillin is called an os, and Shabbos and Yom Tov is an os. So there's no, you don't want an overload of os, that signal of an os, of a dedication to Hashem through the word os. So therefore, on Shabbos and Yontif, we don't wear tefillin. So Abaye says, we don't wear tefillin on Yontif, so why would you be allowed to send it on Yontif? So the Gemara answer is, Hachi ka'amar, kol shini osin bo b'chol, mishalchin oso b'yom tov. That when the Mishnah said, kol shini osin bo b'yom tov, mishalchin oso, don't put the comma after the word yom tov, put the comma after the word shniosin. So it says kol shniosin bo, anything that is derives benefit from it in any respect, meaning even on kol biyom tov mishalchenoso. You could send it on yontif, meaning it doesn't need to be usable on yontif for you to be able to send it to someone as a gift on yontif. It just needs to be usable in some respect, not muktza. And so tefillin are usable on kol, and therefore you're allowed to send tefillin on Yontif. That's not a problem. So that's the question. Wouldn't you say it's muksa? The Tosos talks about the fact that that tefillin is not necessarily completely out of the question for use on Yontif. If you look at Tosos Hachi Kamar, he says al tefillin mikomakom leke yisuro anichan, that it's or he starts at the beginning. He says da afili maniachos an leke yisuro. Tosfos points out here that it's not actually usur to wear tefillin on Yontif, it's just not appropriate, it's not required. Which gives rise to a discussion among the poskim, because there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, apparently, that says, quotes Rabbi Eliezer, I think, who says that you're not allowed to wear tefillin, at least on Shabbos. So I looked in the Sharim Misyanim Balacha, he quotes the Aichuva from the Shagas Aryeh, who points out that the isur identified in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it only applies to Shabbos. You're not. It's muktzah on Shabbos, but not on Yontif. And the Shagas Aryeh explains is because the whole basis for the idea of muktzah is a gezeira atu otza, that you're going to carry it outside. the Isser Otsai, we used to with respect to tefillin, is kind of downgraded on Yantif because we hold mitoch shotzer l'tzarech, chutzer nami shelo l'tzarech. You're allowed to carry something on Yantif even if it's not l'tzarech ochol nefesh, and so therefore, perhaps carrying tefillin outside wouldn't be such a problem, which means that the tefillin themselves wouldn't be muktza on Yantif itself. I think practically speaking, we assume they are muktza. Because practically speaking, no one wears tefillin on Yontif. This might play into the idea that back then they were much more likely to wear tefillin all day, as we'll see in a moment, the story that we're going to talk about. Whereas nowadays we just wear tefillin at davening. We clearly don't wear tefillin at davening on Yontif, so there's nothing to talk about. I don't think we're allowed to move tefillin on Yontif. You know, generally speaking, we assume it's muksa. Okay, the Gemara continues. So, Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, tefillin... Now that you're talking about tefillin, hov asul yadan nemu bimolsa. Now that we're on the topic of tefillin, let me tell you something interesting about tefillin. Haya baba derech. If someone is coming home and they're coming from an area they're coming from kind of the wilderness, the forest or the plains, whatever it was, where there's no safe place to put something down on Shabbos. Haya baba derech with tefillin barosho, and he's wearing tefillin on his head. Vishaka alav chama, and now he sees the sun is setting. Shabbos is coming. Meiniach yado alein ad shemagia lebeso. So he should cover them with his hand. Rashi says this type of carrying or wearing of tefillin is kind of derech malbush. He's wearing it as a garment, and the additional fact that he's putting his hand over it makes it kind of a shinoi. So this downgrades the problem of otsa or muktza or whatever is the problem. And again, because you have no place to put the tefillin, Shabbos is coming, you can't just take them off and leave them in the middle of the field. So you can do that, walk with them, with your hand covering them, ad shemagilo beso, until you get home. And then when you get home, you'll take them off and leave them there. What will the neighbors say? Well, that's why, you know, cover them with your hand. Right. And similarly, haya yoshev bebeis medrash, and if you're sitting in the Beis Medrash, and again, we're talking about a Beis Medrash that's out in the wilderness, that's not near any other place that's safe, with tefillin barosho, v'kidesh alav hayom. So again, you're wearing tefillin, and it's starting to get dark, Shabbos is coming, meniach yado alein, hashem agilu beis, so you can put your hand on them and wear them until you get to your house. Masiv Rav Huna, Breid Rav Ika, so he says, he has a question from a Breisa, he has Baba Derech. The Braisa says that if you're coming from the field with tefillin barosho, when you're wearing tefillin, v'kidei shalav hayom, and it starts to get dark, Shabbos is coming, meniach yado aleihem ad shemagia l'bayis hasamach l'choma. You can't bring them all the way to your house. You have to stop and take them off at the first house right near the wall of the city, the first safe place. That's where you have to take them off. You can't keep on walking through the city and bring it all the way to your house. And similarly, Hayoshev Mesimedrash, if you're sitting in the study hall, V'kidei Shalav Hayom, Shabbos is coming, Meniach Yado Aleihem Ad Shemagia L'Bayis Samach L'Beis Medrash. You have to cover them, and then you take them off as soon as you get to the first house where there's safety.
The first safe house
where you could put them.
Why wouldn't you leave them in the
Beis Medrash? I'm not sure.
You said it was out in the field.
I guess it was out in the field. It's not secure. It's not secure. It's
a Beis Medrash study hall.
No, it's a study hall that's kind of out in the field. So I guess they didn't have a lock on the door. Maybe it was just susceptible to being to having the film stolen or animals getting in. Yeah. So the question that's raised by this Bryce is, Abaye's din was that you can bring it all the way, you can wear it all the way to your house. Here we seem to be saying they have to take it off at the first Jewish house, the first safe place where you could possibly take it off. So the Gemara answer is lo kasha. It's not a problem. Ha de mintera, ha de lo mintera. One is where that first safe house is a safe area where you could take it off. And Abaye is talking about where the first safe place is to get to your house. The house right by the chomah is not necessarily secure. So the Gemara says, if we're talking altogether about a place that's not safe, where their tefillin are not secure, so then my area barosho. Why did Abaye say that we're talking about a situation only where you were wearing the tefillin and you need to bring it to safety? Afilu machten ba'ara nami. Even if you found tefillin sitting on the ground, meaning it wasn't your tefillin, you weren't wearing it on your head, even in that situation you should be able to save it. The Hatanan, because we have a Mishnah that says Hamotzei Tefillin, if you find tefillin again in an unsafe area that's not secure, and Shabbos is coming, or it's Shabbos, so what can you do? Machnisin zug zug. So to bring the tefillin to a safe place on Shabbos would be problematic because of Muktzah. But the Mishnah has a trick, and it says we relax the rules here a little bit, and we'll allow you to put the tefillin on, so therefore it's derech malbush, it's not a problem with Otzah, not a problem with Muktzah, and you're, or not a problem with Otzah.
What is the expression zug zug?
Zug zug means tefillin by tefillin, meaning you find a few pairs of tefillin, so you could put tefillin on one at a time, one pair of tefillin, then walk it to where it needs to go to be to safety. Come back, put the next tefillin on, and walk it to where it needs to go
one
in
by
order
one
to,
or
to safety.
On by on?
Hmm?
Zug by zug. What's
zug? It means a pair.
A pair. Okay.
Yeah, so pair by pair. So you could do that. So it seems to be saying that even if you weren't wearing it, I'm sorry,
you can't put them all.
Yeah, you can't put them all one at a time because that's too much of a trick. You have to genuinely put it, wear it as if you're wearing it tefillin. So here we seem to be saying in the Mishnah that you can carry tefillin to safety on Shabbos even if you weren't already wearing it. And for some reason, Abaye seemed to limit his halacha to where you are already wearing it. Only then can you take advantage of this leniency and then walk it to a safe place. So the Gemara answer is lo kasha, not a question. Hadda, and let's go to the Maharam. The gears here is a little messed up. If you look on the side, the gears of the Maharam makes a lot more sense. Hadda lo mintura machmas ganve umachmas kalbi. One situation is where it's completely exposed. The situation where we're saying that you could even pick up tefillin off the floor and carry them to safety zug-zug, wear them to safety zug-zug, that's where they're completely exposed to dogs, to stray animals that might damage them, and to robbers who might steal them. Vaha, and the case that Abaye was speaking of, where he limited his leniency to where you were wearing them already, vaha demintera machmas kalbi velo machmas ganvi. That's where they're not susceptible to animals, to dogs eating them or damaging them. They're just susceptible to robbers. So it's not quite as much of a danger, and therefore Abaye's halacha is limited to the situation where you're wearing the tefillin already, but you can't pick up tefillin off the floor and take those to safety because the risk is not so great, the exposure to risk is not so great. It's just a problem of ganavim.
What's the difference, those two differences between location and between danger and time?
Well, there are two types of danger. One's the danger of animals damaging it, and one's the danger of robbers stealing it.
So different situations.
If it's just the danger of ganve, of robbers, so then it's less of a problem. And there Abaye would say you could only spring them to safety if you were already wearing the tefillin.
And you assess the danger, it's a self-assessment of the danger.
Yeah, these are the parameters that Chazal are telling you, and you can apply them based on the level of danger. Back in the Gemara, Ma'u detema, and Abaye was coming to teach you that you might have thought, Rov listim Yisrael ninu. Most of the robbers are Jews. That doesn't mean to say most of the robbers in the world are Jews. We're talking about a place where it's a Jewish area. So since it's a place where the population is Jewish, so the robbers are Jewish people. And therefore, v'lo mezalz li'buhu, they're going to be sensitive to the fact that these are tefillin. It's one thing to be a robber, but if you're a Jewish robber, you're not going to start stealing tefillin. You're not going to start damaging tefillin. And so therefore, Abaye is saying, or Abaye was addressing the fact that you might have thought that since even a robber is not going to possibly take tefillin, perhaps there's no heter at all. Kamashmo and Rabbi says, no, a robber is a robber, and he might very well take tefillin also, and therefore you are allowed to take the tefillin to safety as long as you're already wearing it. So Hadron Alach, Beitza, this is a significant accomplishment. This is our first parak that we finished for Daf Shavua. Okay, and now we start the second parak. The second parak at the beginning talks about the institution of Eruv Tavshilin, which is something we're all familiar with. So the Mishnah says, Yom Tov Shechal Lios Erev Shabbos. Let's say you have a Yontif that falls out on a Friday. Lo Yivashel B'tchila Mi Yom Tov U'Shabbos. So you're not generally allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Ava Mavashel Hu Yom Tov Vim Hosir Hosir L'Shabbos. However, you are allowed to cook for that day, and you don't have to be extra careful not to cook a little more, you can cook a little more as part of the process of cooking for the yontif meals, and then leave a little left over and have a little left over for, or a lot left over for Shabbos, and that's not a problem. So that's kind of a tricky way to cook on yontif for Shabbos. However, there's a better way even. Ve'osa tavshil me'erav yom tov. If you want to, you could start cooking on erev yontif. Make a tavshil on erev yom tov. And that kind of wraps together the whole situation. And by starting your cooking and setting aside food from Erev Yontif for Shabbos, then you're allowed to cook on Yontif for Shabbos. This is what we know as an Erev Tavshil. You take a piece of food that's cooked on Erev Yontif and you designate it for Shabbos, and that will work to create an Erev Tavshil, and it will allow you to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. Beishamai Omrim, Shnei Tavshilin. Beishamai says you need to use two cooked items. Uveisil Omrim Tavshil Echad. Beisil says it's sufficient to use one cooked item. Veshavin Bedag Ubeitza Shalov Shein Shnei Tavshilin. And even Beishamai, who requires two Tavshilin, will allow you to use one dish that consists of two cooked items, such as where you have a fish and you have an egg that's on top of the fish. So there are two distinct cooked items, even though they're cooked as one dish. That for Beis Shammai is considered two dishes, two tavshilin, and will work for Erev Tavshilin. And here's an important limitation on Erev Tavshilin. Achlo o she'avad, let's say you eat it, or you lose it, you accidentally eat the whole thing, or you lose it, can't find it, lo yuvash olav b'tchila. So then you're not allowed to rely on that Erev Tavshilin. That means you can't cook on Yontif for that Shabbos. You got to be careful when you make an Erev Tavshilin to put it in a safe place. V'imshir mimenu kolshu. However, the Mishnah points out, don't worry too much, because even if there's just a little bit left over, that's enough. So if you eat the majority of your Erev Tavshilin, but there's a few crumbs left, that's going to be enough to allow you to cook on Yontif for Shabbos. V'imshir mimenu kolshu, so mechal avu Shabbos, you can rely on that for Shabbos. Okay. The Gemara now says, Minahani Mili. Where do we know? What's the origin of Erev Tavshilin? Now, normally when we see Minahani Mili and we quote a pasuk as we're about to do, that is because we're looking for a biblical source for a mitzvah or for some sort of halacha. Here, Rashi is very quick to point out that the whole institution of Erev Tavshilin is only Midrabanan. So let's just take a moment to kind of understand the construct of Erev Tavshilin. Why is it that, how does Erev Tavshilin work, right? Because you would normally, a rabbinic construct of an Erev Tavshilin is not going to be able to override an Issur Doraisa, right? So we have to somehow figure out why the concept of preparing from Yontif to Shabbos is only a rabbinic prohibition, and then Heim Amru Veheim Amru, the rabbis can now override their own rabbinic prohibition with an institution like Erev Tavshilin. So the Gemara in Psachim explains that there's Machlokas Amoraim between Rabba and Rav Chisda. Rabba holds that you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. That's on a biblical level. However, Rabba holds of this concept of Hoel v'Mikloi Orchin Chazuluhu. The idea that you can cook on Yontif for Shabbos if there is sufficient time in the day for people to come. Meaning, when you cook on Yontif, even if you have in mind for Shabbos, who's to say that something might occur, some surprising event might occur, some guests might knock on your door, and then you'll be forced to feed them the food that you were cooking today anyway. So since there's the theoretical possibility that the food you're cooking now on Yontif, on Friday, can be used to feed someone on Friday, so that kind of downgrades the whole problem just to a rabbinic prohibition. You're not, right, even though, again, you have in mind to cook for Shabbos, but since the theoretical possibility exists that people are going to come and show up at your doorstep and you're going to use this food for today anyway, so therefore it's only really a rabbinic prohibition, and then the Rabbanan can come along and say, okay, with an Erev Tavshilin, we're going to say Heter Gomer, you're allowed to do without a problem.
Would it be better or a different status if you say, I'm cooking for Yontif, but if I don't eat it, then I'll eat it on Shabbos? Or, Dafka, if you're cooking on Yontif, you should have in mind specifically for Shabbos, and but the evidence.
Rabba says, at least on a biblical level, you don't even need to go that far. The mere fact that there's a theoretical possibility that you could use this food for today,
you don't have to do crazy stuff.
There is one restriction, however. The Magen Avram talks about this, and this actually applies to Halacha. If you're cooking very up to the last minute, that's going to be problematic because there's no opportunity then for them to come. Right.
That's not for the
You got to make sure that there's some kind of. So the Magen Avraham actually says halacha that when Yontif falls on Friday, for an Erev Tav Shalom to work, you need to have that lag. You can't cook right up until Shkia. That's going to be a problem. So that's Rabba's analysis. Rav Chista says a little differently. He doesn't hold of Hoil, but he says. He says, Sarche Shabbos nasin b'yontov, that you're allowed to cook on Yontov for Shabbos. The biblical prohibition for which you actually get Malkus is only cooking from Yontov for Chol. But when a Kedusha goes into another Kedusha, when Yom Kadosh goes into another Yom Kadosh, so then Sarche Shabbos mevashlim b'yontov, you're allowed to cook on a biblical level at least for Shabbos, and therefore the rabbis now only prohibited that without an Erev Tav Shilin. With an Erev Tav Shilin, they permitted it. Okay.
But this Erev Tav Shilin, is it actually cooking or is this really preparing? Because like an example, I'm saying if let's say the items are cooked and it's Friday afternoon, but you got to get it on the blech or whatever, now you're really preparing for the next day because you can't put it on the blech after you light candles. So it's really the... Like,
well, the idea is once you kick it off a little, once you kick it off a little on Erev Yontif and say, look, this gefilte fish, which I already cooked, I'm really cooked it for Shabbos. You kind of unite all the days together. That's a symbolic act that kind of allows you to...
About, well, let's say an hour before lift benching.
Yeah.
It's Yontif.
On Erev Yontif?
On Friday.
On Friday, yeah.
And yeah, tomorrow is also Yontif and Shabbos. You're really preparing for the next day.
Yes. So that's what we're saying. So the rabbi,
so
where it's
you
only...
you really could be like preparing up to the last minute.
But not cooking.
But not actually cooking. But you are... So I'm saying like that Erev Tav Shilin, it seems like it's got a dual kind of a status. It's like it allows you to cook, but also prepare right
Well, no, but it's all the same content. I mean, you're right, cooking right. is... The problem with cooking... you're allowed
you're
to cook.
You're saying about preparing up to the last minute right before... But sometimes you are doing last minute stuff.
Oh, you're saying even if you're not cooking, you might be setting the table right before candle lighting.
Well, yeah. But setting the table is not a malacha. But let's say.
No, but it's preparation.
It is preparation.
So,
right.
So it could be the Magen Avraham. You have to look at how the Magen Avraham phrases it.
Setting the table. There's no prohibition of doing it after lich benching. I'm talking about things that would be prohibited to do once Shabbos starts. I'm doing the last minute.
I don't think it matters. Meaning the problem is. Preparing,
right.
So that, to the extent that you're relying on your Erev Tav Shilin to prepare from one day to another,
right.
Magen Avraham, I think, said you have to look at his lesson exactly, whether he limits it to cooking, but I think it's probably all preparations. You can't prepare right up to the last minute.
Uh-huh.
You have to leave that gap.
You have to give a gap.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Some shuls will actually daven mincha earlier for that reason, right? You'll bring in Shabbos early, at least in summer Yom Tovim, so you'll bring in Shabbos earlier, in order so that there's kind of a built-in gap. So there's no way you're going to cook.
Well, they're assuming that the women come to Minyan.
No, we're going to tell them to light candles early.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that...
preparing your candles to light is preparing for the next day, preparing it for Shabbos.
Okay, but that solves if you're preparing early. That's solved if you prepare early. So then when you're preparing, in theory, you could push it up. Or in theory, your preparation now could be for someone that's coming. You know, you're lighting these candles for some guest that's coming, and it's still
and
for today.
You bring Shabbos in early, which is what you're allowed to do.
What is the word?
You're right. There's kind of a circular element to it. But once we're allowing it through the Erev Tav Shilin, we allow it. That's the concept.
What is the word for theory?
I'm sorry.
Theory. Theore. Theoretical. What is the word for that in Hebrew?
The word for theory in Hebrew. I don't know.
Theoretical.
You
keep using theoretical.
I keep on using that.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't.
All right, so let's do the Gemara. Minani
mi. Theoretically, because, you know, when you use the word theoretically, you know, in this day of computer age, computers don't think theoretically. And
right.
Humans don't think always theoretically.
Right. Okay. Fine. Let's see. Gemara says, Minani mi. How do we know this? Meaning, what's the source for this concept? That we're discussing. Amar Shmuel, Amar Kra. Shmuel quotes the pasuk. Zachoras Yom Hashavas LeKadsho. The pasuk says that you have to remember Shabbos. Zachreyu Me'achar Shabalash Kicha. So Rashi points out that you wouldn't need the pasuk to tell you to remember Shabbos. We talk about Shabbos all the time in all the psukim, in all sorts of psukim. So what's this concept of remembering it? So Shmuel says, when we say remember Shabbos, we must be talking about a situation that is likely where you'd forget Shabbos. Meaning this situation in particular, where you're cooking and doing all sorts of things for Yontif, Shabbos is going to get kind of lost in the mix. And therefore, we're pointed when the pasuk says "Zachor Yom Shabbos Lekad Show." So Chazal are using that as an asmachter for this concept that you have to go out of your way to remember Shabbos, do something special for Shabbos, meaning making an Erev Tavshilin to preserve your ability to prepare for Shabbos. So my taima. So here too, my taima is kind of doesn't have its normal definition of my taima or translation of my taima. My taima here means what is the concept, or what's going on with the Erev Tav Shilin? What's the purpose of the Erev Tav Shilin? Why set aside food? What are we actually trying to accomplish? So Amar Rava, Kadei Sheyivrar Mana Yafe LeShabbos UMana Yafe LeYom Tov. Rava says that the purpose is so that you can set aside and you can designate food for Shabbos and for Yom Tov. You won't eat up all the food on Yom Tov. You're still going to have a good amount of select food for Shabbos. Rav Ashi Yomer Kadei Sheyomru Ein Ofin Miyom Tov LeShabbos Kavachomer Miyom Tov LeChol. So Rav Ashi says the concept of putting aside food, an Erev Tav Shilin, is in order to remind you that you have to preserve the sanctity of Yom Tov. And just like by putting aside the food, you're pointing out to yourself, or you're emphasizing the fact that you're not allowed to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos, so all the more so you can't prepare from Yom Tov to Chol. Meaning this machlokes between Rav and Rav Ashi is, what is the purpose of the Erev Tav Shilin, or what is the function of the Erev Tav Shilin? Is it to emphasize the importance of Yom Tov, as Rav Ashi says, or is it to emphasize the importance of Shabbos, that you shouldn't forget Shabbos, as Rava says? So the Gemara to quote the Mishnah, Tanan, Osa Tavshil Me Erev Yom Tov, V'Somech Alav L'Shabbos. You can make, or you should make, a Tavshil from Erev Yom Tov. This is how you make an Erev Tavshil. And you make a cooked item from Erev Yom Tov, and then you can use that for Shabbos. So, in other words, it's saying you can't prepare this food in Yom Tov itself. You have to have it prepared from Erev Yom Tov. So, Bishmo Rav Ashi, Amar Kadeshi Yom Ruin Ofin Yom Tov LeShabbos, Hainu De Erev Yom Tov In Yom Tov Lo. So, according to Rav Ashi, you said the whole purpose here is to emphasize the importance of Yom Tov, and to teach you that on Yom Tov you can't prepare from Yom Tov to Chol. That Yom Tov, the sanctity of Yom Tov is such that you have to be careful. So that makes perfect sense that you have to prepare your Erev Tav Shilin from before Yom Tov. It's because it's to emphasize you can't do something on Yom Tov. So you have to prepare it from before Yom Tov to emphasize the sanctity of Yom Tov. El Rava, but for Rava, who says the whole purpose of Erev Tav Shilin is to remind us of the sanctity of Shabbos, my area may Erev Yom Tov, afilu b'Yom Tov Nami. You should be able to. Why do you have to prepare your Erev Tav Shilin from before Yom Tov? Again, if it's to demonstrate the sanctity of Shabbos, why can't you just prepare an extra piece of gefilte fish on Yom Tov itself and say this piece of gefilte fish is set aside for Shabbos? Because again, according to Rava, the whole purpose of the Erev Tav Shilin is to demonstrate the sanctity of Shabbos. So why do you have to prepare it from before Yom Tov? My answer is in Achinami. It's true. In theory, you could have prepared it from Erev Yom Tov, El Gzeira Shema Yifsha. But this is a Gzeira because we're afraid you might forget to do it on Yom Tov itself. And so maybe when you can still write it down and make a list of things you can do and that you have to do before Yom Tov comes, we're saying you have to go ahead and do that. Good. So we just said that Shmuel, who's Amora, said that the source for this concept is Choras Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. The Gemara now says, V'tana Maisu Amehacha. And a certain Tana, the Mishnah, cites a different pasuk as the source or as the asmachta. Eisa sher tofu afu, veisa sher tivashelu bashelu. This was a pasuk we quoted in the very, very first daf of talking about preparing food on Friday for Shabbos. So Rashi points out that it could have just said in a very simple lashon tzivoy, hayom afu uvashelu. Today on Friday you should cook and you should bake. Instead it says it in a kind of passive language. Isha share toafu, not passive. It says there are things that you should bake and there are things that you should cook. Mikan Amar Rabbi Lazar ain ofin ela afoy vein vashin ela mvushal. Meaning the fact that the pasuk says there are things that should be cooked on Friday and there are things that should be baked on Friday implies that there are other things that you should not cook or bake on Friday. So Rabbi Lazar says, what's this talking about? It's talking about a yontif that falls on Erev Shabbos, and that's the situation where you can't necessarily cook today or bake today unless you've done something specific like prepared the Erev Tavshilin. Mikan samchu chachamim v'iruvi tavshilin min haTorah. And that's the basis, says Rav Lazar, for, not basis, but that's the asmachta. That's kind of the hook that Chazal linked to as a kind of biblical quasi-source for the concept of the Erev Tavshilin.
Did that happen last Sukkot with the...
Yeah, I think so. We had Erev Tavshilin recently. We had Yontif going into Shabbos. Tan Rabbanan, now we're going to quote a Braisa. Maisa b'Rabbi Eliezer. Shaye Yoshev v'dorish kol yom kulo b'ilchos yom tov. So it was Yontif, and Rabbi Eliezer was giving shir to his Talmidim, a big group of Talmidim in the Beis Medrash, on Yontif. He was talking about the halachas of Yontif. Yatzasa kas rishona. And a group of Talmidim left. And why did they leave? Rabbi Eliezer figured they were leaving to go eat. To go eat their Yontif meal. So Amar halogu bali pitsin. He says, these guys, these Talmidim, they are big barrel guys. Meaning he was saying, these guys are really into food, they're really into eating their Yontif meal. So he said in a pejorative way, these are bali pitsin, these are the barrel boys. Kashnia, a second group left, a little later. Amar halogu bali chavios. So he said, these are the... A smaller form of barrel. This was slightly less pejorative, I guess because he was reflecting the fact that they stuck around a little longer to hear a little more of the shir, but they weren't so great because they went a few minutes later and they went to eat. So they are bali chavios. These are also barrel boys. Kashlishis, the third group left a few minutes later, amar haloli bali kadin. These are jug people. So again, a little less pejorative, but not very impressed with them. Kasrvias amar, Kasrvias, the fourth group left. Amar halalu ba'alei leginim. So he said, these are, I'm running out of synonyms for jugs, but these are jugs that are a little smaller.
Flasks.
These are the flask boys.
Yeah. This reminds me of the orbitals, the SPD and F orbitals, SPD, EF, F orbitals on an atom. You know,
okay, in, good. I'm not familiar with that, but
physics
so each level he's going a little less down in his trash talking them. Kas Chamishis, the fifth group left. Amar halolo bali kosos. These are the cup guys. They are not quite as hungry as the first four groups that left, but they're also quick to go eat. His chilu kas shishis latzeis, and now the sixth group started to leave. Amar halolo bali ma'ara. So he says, these are the catastrophe people. Meaning this was now, he jumped way up to a much higher level of a pejorative. He was saying, this is a disaster that these guys are leaving. Nasan Einav bit Holy Bali Mara. So Rashi points out that what was really troubling him at this point and why he kind of raised the bar for this is he saw that almost no one's left. So now he was like, this is a real disaster. I'm giving a shir, and just about everyone's gone. There are only a few people left. So Nasan Einav Betalmidim. Now he puts his eyes and he sees the few students that are left, and he looks at them. He tchilu pnei mishtanin. So they started getting really nervous because they thought that maybe he was... The fact that he rose the bar for this last group that left, so he thought maybe they were all confused now, right? So they thought that maybe he was getting upset at them for staying so long and not eating their Yontif meal. So they started to get really freaked out. So Amar Lahem, so he said to them, Banai lo lachem ani omer. I'm not upset at you guys. You guys are doing the right thing. You're sitting here and learning Torah. You're staying in the shir. Ela lo sheyatsu. I'm really upset at the people that left. They are abandoning eternal values and eternal world, and instead they're opting for this ephemeral world. They want a good meal. So Bishas Petirasan, and now finally, when the shir was over and these guys left, the final group of students left, Amar Lahem, so then he finally had something very nice to say to them. He said, "Luchu ichu mashmanim, ushesu mamtakim, eat and drink good food." Again, it's Yontif. Vishalchu manos leinachan lo, send packages of food to people who don't have it. Ki kadosh hayom la'adoneinu, because today is a holy day. Al te'atzvu, and don't be sad. Ki chedvas Hashem hu ma'azchem, today is a day of celebration, a day of honor for Hashem, a day of gladness for Hashem. So Amar Mar, Shemenichem chai olam, v'oskim chai shah. What is going on here? Why was Rav Lazar so upset at these people for leaving the shir early and going to eat a yontif meal? It's a mitzvah to eat a meal on yontif. It's also a mitzvah to learn Torah, but it's a mitzvah to eat a meal on yontif. So what's the big deal?
We derive a lesson out of that.
Let's see. So Rav Lazar with Taimei. So the Gemara says that Rav Lazar was consistent with his opinion. D'amar simchas yom tov rishus. He holds that simchas yom tov is an option. It's optional, the concept of simchas yom tov. D'tanya, we have a brisa that says Rav Lazar Omer, ein lo adam biyom tov ela ochel v'shosa o yoshe v'shona. So a person has to choose on any given yontif whether he wants to eat and drink or whether he wants to learn Torah. It's one or the other. It's a binary choice. Either eat or drink, dedicate the day to yourself, to the idea of simchas yom tov, or dedicate the day to Hashem by sitting and learning. Rav Yoshua Omer, he says, no, chalkehu, chetzio Hashem v'chetzio Hashem. You should split the day, half for Hashem, half for yourself. Amar Rav Yochanan v'shneim mikra echad darshu. Both of them derived their respective opinions from the same pasuk. Kasav echad omer, one pasuk says, atzeres Hashem elkechad, today is a day, a yontif for Hashem. One pasuk says that. V'kasav echad omer, another pasuk says, atzeres tielachem. This is a day of yontif for you. Hakeit said, how could you reconcile both pasukim? Rabbi Eliezer, Savar, Oku Hashem, Oku Achem. So Rabbi Eliezer holds this idea that you choose whether the whole day is dedicated to you, to Simchas Yom Tov, or dedicated to Hashem. Rabbi Yoshua, Savar, he holds Chelkeyu, Chetzio Hashem, Chetzio Achem. Split it, half for Hashem, half for you, half for you. But again, to explain Rabbi Eliezer, he was upset that these students chose Simchas Yom Tov as what they should dedicate their day to, rather than dedicating the entire day to learning Torah. Because he held that it should be one or the other. The conclusion is we pass along with Rav Yoshua, that it's Chetzio Hashem, Chetzio Achem, and generally Ari Yom Tovim is a mix of being in shul, learning Torah, and eating meals, Simchas Yom Tov, on the other hand. Then the Gemara says, Amai Le'in Nachon Lo. What is the phrase in that pasuk we just quoted from the Chemia? Le'in Nachon Lo. We said that Sholchu Manos Le'in Nachon Lo, you should send packages of food, you should send meals to people who don't have it. Amrav Chista Lomisho Hiniach Erev Tavshilin. This is referring to people who didn't make an Erev Tavshilin. Ika Da'amri Mishalo Hayolo Aniach Erev Tavshilin. There's another version of this that says someone who didn't have the time to make an Erev Tavshilin for a good reason. Rashi says because he was looking for a lost object or some other important reason why he couldn't make an Erev Tavshilin. Aval Mishalo Aniach Erev Tavshilin. Someone who could have made an Erev Tavshilin Vohiniach, and he failed to do so, posheahu. He is someone who's shirked his responsibilities.
Because he didn't offer any excuse?
Because he didn't have any excuse, so he's a poshea.
Because he didn't have any excuse then, or at that time?
He didn't have any excuse.
Any time?
He didn't have any excuse on that Erev Yontif. He could have made Erev Tavshilin, and he failed to do so.
He was unable to?
No, he failed to do so. Well, he was able to do so, but he failed to do so. So then he's a poshea.
He was able to, though.
Right. So then the Gemara says, "My ki chedvas Hashem hu ma'uschem." What does this mean? That your strength is in Hashem's joy. Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Lazar Rav Shimon. Amar Lema Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Hashem said to Klal Yisrael, "Banai, my sons, my children, luvu alai v'kidshu kedushas hayom v'aminu bi v'ani poreya. Rely on me." Dedicate the day for me, for Kedusha, and trust in me, Vani Pareya, I'll pay you back. Meaning, I'll pay you back for what you lay out in order to make this day a Kadosh day, what you pay for food, etc. And then we quote another member from Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Lazar Rav Shimon, V'amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Lazar Rav Shimon, Harotzashis Kaimu Nechasav, someone who wants to keep his wealth, keep his assets, Yita Bahen Adar. So if you have a field that you want to keep and make sure no one steals it, no one squats on your field, you should plant an udar tree. Shneimar Adir Bamarom Hashem.
What is an Adir Shi?
So what is an Adir Shi? So Rashi explains that Adir Shi was a particular type of tree that was very noteworthy. That was a particular tree that people would notice it. And what is happening here, he says, is that if you would go on vacation or you go away for a long period of time, if you were concerned that someone would squat on your field and someone would steal your field, if you plant an other tree, which is very distinguishable and very noteworthy, so everyone will say, no, that's Pony's field. That's, you know, that's that guy's field, because that's everyone knows that the one with the other tree on it. And so therefore, that's a security against someone squatting in your field. Inami, or Adara Kishme, Kitgamrinshi, Mai Adra, Dekaima Ladari Dari. So either it's from this pasuk, which says, which kind of exalts this other tree as something noteworthy based on the pasuk, or the other, or perhaps the word other, the reason we call it an other tree is not because of that pasuk of Adir B'mar Hashem, but rather it's Dekaima Ladari Dari, because again, it will last for generations. So other is from the word door, generations. Tanya Nami Hachi.
So not from Adar.
Not from the... excuse me, not from the ninth brother. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a braisa that says, similarly, Sada Sheish Ba'adar Eino Nigzeles. Eino Nichmeses. U'peroseh Amishtamrim. A field that has an other tree plant in it will not be stolen, will not be... Nichmeses means stolen, even... where the guy forces you to sell it to him, and its fruits will be safeguarded. Rashi points out here it's because this other tree had a certain kind of very thick leaf structure, and that would kind of form a barrier, a fence around the field, so that people wouldn't go and steal the fruits.
Sounds like a new technology with the F-18s. Yeah. With the with a kind of mission.